You must be at least 18 years of age to listen to the following podcast.
MJ, thank you for being on Sexual Heroes today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So I got to know you recently. Well, actually, today is the first time we've seen each other face to face, but we got to know each other recently because I'm starting a new group, the Palm Springs Jacks, a masturbation club for men in Palm Springs, obviously, and your venue, Club 541, which is new, is going to host our club. So I'm really appreciative of that. And there's a lot of guys that are excited about it.
Right.
To me, you were my hero because the most important thing in getting an ongoing club together, the most important thing is having that venue, a safe venue, an accessible one, a legal one. That is the most important thing. It's what stops most people from being able to bring a bunch of baiters together on a regular basis. So you were really my hero. And then I learned more about you, and you're just more and more of a hero. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. One of the things I learned about you that was so interesting, in 2021, you celebrated the grand opening of a shelter for LGBTQ youth in Los Angeles.
Yes, I financed it.
Yeah, wow. Can you tell me what prompted that?
I've been involved with the Gay and Lesbian Center in Los Angeles for many, many years. I knew the founders of the center back in the 70s, Morris Kite and that group of men. So it's always been close to my heart. At first, when they were on Highland Avenue, you know, a clinic for VD, for syphilis and gonorrhea, all that, that's where we all went to get our penicillin shot. So I've been involved throughout, a major donor. I believe in community, and the campus in LA, I don't know if you've seen it, but is spectacular, really. What we have done there, the biggest gay and lesbian community campus in the world, takes up a whole block, city block, with ancillary buildings aside. And so all services. And Tom and I, my husband Tom and I, decided we wanted to finance the building of a transitional youth housing building, which I can't remember how many apartments it is. I think it's somewhere between 20 and low 20s to high 20s. Single apartments for lesbian and gay youths that are transitioning to a regular life, getting off of drugs and getting out of their homeless situation and getting back into the mainstream. And so they get an apartment furnished with everything. And then they transition into jobs like in restaurants or other industries around the center. And so they get a life back.
Yeah. I'm guessing a lot of these youth did not come from a supportive family.
Yes. And they suffer, they turn to drugs because they come, a lot of these kids come to LA with this, you know, illusion that they're going to make it into the film industry or modeling or stuff like that. And they end up disappointed and then with no support systems. And so they turn to drugs and they end up sleeping under the freeways. That's unacceptable. We take care of our own, you know?
Where does that sense of community and taking care of our own come from for you?
My parents were very, very socially involved. My dad was a Shriner. He helped build hospitals for crippled children in Mexico. And my mom was a social worker attorney. So I was raised with parents that were very socially conscious and responsible. It washed up on me. When my mom found out I was gay when I was 17, she disinherited me. She didn't understand. So I fled and came up to Los Angeles because I was living in Mexico City. That's where my parents settled. That's where I grew up. And at that time, Mexico did not have an open gay community. Mm-hmm. So I'd come up to LA, and there were all these underground groups, Leatherman, and Motorcycle Guys, Hustlers, and stuff like that. And I felt very, at that age, I felt very connected. That's how it started.
That was your mother's reaction. It was not positive. What about your father?
My dad had already passed away. I suspected my dad might have been gay, might have been bi, but I don't.
You started off in a kind of a mainstream career in the film industry. And then at some point you thought, this isn't really working for me. And you got into the bar industry.
Yes.
Tell me about that transition.
The movie industry in Hollywood and in Mexico and Hollywood, back in the 70s was homophobic. You couldn't be out. If you were, it would be troublesome, as we've seen with Rock Hudson and major movie stars and stuff. Anyway, so I did work in the industry for a bunch of years. I was slowly getting disenchanted with it because I couldn't really be myself. And I had a lover at the time. He was a waiter at a high-end restaurant. I decided I'm going to bail. I worked for Norman Lear in his executive offices. And I just said, okay, this is not going to work for me. So I got a barback position in a teeny little leather bar on Santa Monica Boulevard called The Pit. I started cleaning toilets and sweeping floors and stuff, and then worked myself up to a bartender after probably a year and a half. So, you know, and I was young, and I like men, and I like masculine men.
And you got to be who you really are.
Yeah, in a biker bar in Santa Monica Boulevard.
Sounds good to me.
Well, it was fun. And then AIDS hit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, wow. Guys would come in and they wouldn't drink out of glasses. They wouldn't drink alcoholic drinks out of glasses. They would only drink bottled beer.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, we didn't know where AIDS was coming from. So, but we weathered through that. I mean, it was horrendous. But I stayed in the bar, bartending for many years.
In 1992, you open your first private social club. Now that's sex club, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Called Nighthawk.
Nighthawk. In 92, so AIDS was still prevalent. How did that impact the opening of that sex club?
Well, I mean, I just opened it. You know, I was working next door in the bar at the Gauntlet 2, which is now the Eagle. I knew the owners really well. They had a building next door, and it became vacant. And I said, well, why don't I start a sex club? Because I was going to sex clubs at that point. There was a number of them out there that were fun. And it was a lot of it was jacking off and stuff like that. I mean, there was a lot of fear. But I opened it right next door. It was called Nighthawk. And then eventually the owners bailed on me. They said, you can keep the club, just pay rent. And so it became Prowl, P-R-O-W-L. So I was in that business for about, I'm thinking, 3 to 4 years. And I was constantly being inspected by building and safety and an LAPD detective woman with a little cross on her chest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said to them, I said, you know, you keep on trying to, shut me down. I said, why don't you help me open a legal one and then it'll be fine. And they said, sure. And I was kind of shocked.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. And they picked me up in a black and white car. And we rode around Hollywood for about a week and located the building where Slammer is now.
Hmm.
And that was the year 2000.
Wow, it's just amazing that you had that collaboration with the police department.
And ever since, the police, the LAPD has gotten a lot better. From then on, we had some really good chiefs of police that included us. I served on a gay and lesbian advisory board for Bernard Parks, who was at that point the chief of LAPD. LAPD got more inclusive, and we had issues like entrapment in bathrooms and parks and stuff like that. So we worked on issues of the community, you know, with the cops.
And the club was a safe haven. Men could be sexual and not have to worry about being raided or...
Right. It was an interesting time, especially when we had these clubs that were illegal. And they were illegal because of zoning issues.
Mm-hmm. Yours is not a bathhouse. There's no showers. There's no jacuzzi, steam room, none of that. So that's what's so interesting about your club. People aren't walking around typically with a towel wrapped around their waist. It's not like that. Can you tell me how came to be, what your thoughts are that led you to the idea that we don't need that?
Well, I mean, there's two things. One is I really like just wearing street clothes. You know, you go into this building and there's all these guys, and some are naked or some are semi-naked, but it's all about just seeing the guys dress as they are, you know, maybe leather, maybe not. The other thing is financial, because you make a lot more money with a sex club than a bathhouse. Your overhead is way lower. I mean, you're not paying water. You're not, you're not paying for a jacuzzi or a steam room.
And all that maintenance.
And the maintenance, and also the health department, because you've got towels and sheets and you have to wash them and all that. And I'm thinking, no, it's about guys just getting off on each other, and we have paper towels, just the basics.
So I love your club. I went there years ago. A friend turned me on to it, and it so works for me, because I'm not into sex parties. That's not my thing. But when I went into your club, it felt very nostalgic for me, like pre-AIDS. That whole, like, going into a bar and cruising, it has that kind of energy when I go into it. The hunt is there.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like about.
And it's got a kind of an alley, a back alley.
Like. It does. And you have the freedom to be as slutty as you want to be without thinking that there's going to be a cop coming around the corner. So, you know, you could be there in your street clothes and you want to flip your dick out. You know, you can do that safely.
It's also really important, because it's about intimacy. That's what it is. A lot of guys are afraid of intimacy in a bar setting or on the street or in a restaurant. You know, they're just not sure how to connect with other guys,
mm-hmm.
and are intimidated. Or in a sex club, everybody becomes kind of sort of equal. It depends on your taste. But we don't, you know, if you like fat guys, if you like skinny guys, if you like big dicks, small dicks, you know, there's all the strata of our likes and our kinks and all of that. When you connect with somebody at a sex club with a guy, you know, you can go into a private booth and you can really get acquainted the way you should. Or you can go, you know, the secretorium, and you could go into an orgy room or something. And so there's all of these choices that you have in which you feel more comfortable expressing yourself. And that's what it's all about. It's about expressing yourself the way you want to express yourself without being embarrassed.
Yeah.
You start communicating with guys the way you've not been able to communicate on the street or in a bar, let's say. Because in a bar, at that point, you had to drink to disinhibit yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, so you can't drink, you can't have alcohol, but still you're walking around, you're horny, and you're watching these men and you're attracted to them, and you start, you know, you hook up with one because of the eye, you know, the eye contact and the sexual swagger, and then you fall into this tussle of, you know, the playing around and finding yourself with another guy.
You mentioned eye contact or no eye contact, because there are plenty of glory holes there too. For guys that have never been to your clubs and maybe living in an area where there's no clubs, and probably never will be, can you describe this, what I call the stage area?
Well, I call it the suckatorium because it's basically a glory hole area where you suck dick and you're at a different level than the other guy. Either you suck dick or get your dick sucked. And a lot of guys, that's very popular.
Well, I may have spent some time there.
I thought I recognized you.
Oh, that, I'll be honest. When I saw that, I felt like a kid in a candy store.
That's what it is. Yep. That's great.
Well, all I can say is your clubs are a public service.
Yeah.
You worked with the police and you got Slammer open. Tell me how that translated to opening a club in Palm Springs, and why Palm Springs?
After going through three clubs, because two of them were illegal, it was a, you know, Nighthawk Prowl, and then I built the legal Slammer. I built one in Fort Lauderdale, and then I sold because of many different reasons. I just didn't want to go back and forth. Palm Springs, we moved here about 3 years ago. I lived in Palm Springs before, and I used to play in the bushes over at the Vista Grande. And even before that, in Cathedral City, I used to play at the Desperate Palms, we call it. Desert Palms.
Oh, yes.
Dave's Villa Capri with the little houses. Anyway, so it was always a sexually charged area, Palm Springs at Cathedral City. This time, when we moved here, I just had to do something, and I didn't know what. So I just decided to build a sex club. It's what I know how to do.
It wasn't zoned for that. I mean, I was shocked when I heard that it was happening.
Oh, the council was great. The council was, they were great. I mean, it took, you know, it didn't just happen. I mean, I had to really get to know them, but they were great. All of them, all fun.
Well, again, my hero for making that happen.
Well, I don't see myself as a hero, really. I don't. But I'm a businessman, and I like to fuck around.
Well, I'm glad. If you were at a cocktail party in mixed company, men, women, straight and gay, and you were in a group of people, and they were all sharing what they did for a living, and some lady says, "Oh, so, and what business are you in?" What would you say?
Okay, so that did happen to me a lot, especially when my mom was alive, and her friends used to ask me, you know, what area. And these are, you know, little old ladies that, you know, my mom lived to 93. So, and I would usually say, I'm in the nightclub business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a cover at that point because I had a dance club. So I would say, yes, I'm in the bar business. You know, and I still say, I'm, with, especially with women, and some, you know, conservative men, I'll just say I own a gay bar, or I own a gay social club.
Mm. Do you think we'll ever get to a point where it'd be okay to say that?
Well, as you know, our community is changing. I mean, to where it isn't like it was before. I mean, we've got trans guys with vaginas. We have, yeah. I mean, it's just, you go into West Hollywood, and it's not Boys Town anymore. It's a mix.
Uh-huh.
The very essence of what it was before. Before, in the 70s and 80s, L.A. and West Hollywood was basically a white, gay, male group of guys. It was very segregated. Actually, you didn't see a lot of black guys. You didn't see a lot of Latinos. Now that's changed. And for good, there's a whole new social scene which we're not used to, and we have to adapt to. And that's kind of a little bit strange.
Strange? How?
Well, I mean, first of all, I run a private membership club for men. Mm-hmm. So how do I allow a trans person to come in? Well, they have to identify as male and have ID that identifies as male. If they have a vagina, well, they have a vagina. They're a man. If they have tits, they have tits. So that's what I mean by changing. There's not a lot of it right now, and we've dealt with some of it, and it hasn't been a hindrance because the club is dark and mysterious. And if you run across a guy who has a vagina, well, you're not his type. They're not your type.
Or they might be your type.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, they might.
You mentioned your mother again. So did you reconnect with your mother at some point?
Yeah. My mom became my best friend, really. She got educated on gay stuff by my aunt, who was an art teacher. And well, they were very close. So yes, things got way better with my mom later.
That's good to hear. Did she know what business you were in?
Yes.
She did know.
She said, as long as the community accepts you for what you're doing, that go for it. She was very, very liberal. Yeah.
Wow. She made a big leap.
Yes, she did. She never wanted to hear what I did in bed, though. But,
Your mom doesn't need those details. This is such a cliche question, but, I mean, you've done so much in the community. What are you most proud of?
My most proud thing was ACT UP. That was my most proud moment. It was desperation time. It was very scary, and I hooked up with a group of guys and women, and we did, we went to jail together, we did a number of actions together, we were very organized, we were desperate, a lot of the members had passed away, but we were a dedicated group of, I would say, sort of anarchists. Because it was the Reagan years, and we had to bring attention to the situation. We became militant, not in a violent way, but we changed things. Really, we changed the FDA and the process for giving out meds that are life-saving. So we brought the issue to the forefront. And it started in New York. I was involved with the Los Angeles chapter. And there was a more active chapter in San Francisco as well. That was the moment that something had to be done.
Well, that's definitely something to be proud of. I know that some of my listeners have never been to a sex club. I'm sure many of them. And some of them are a bit fearful of going into a club. They have all kinds of things going around their head, imagining things that may or may not be true. What would you tell somebody who has so much trepidation about going into a sex club that would make them overcome that fear and make the leap and go?
You got to be brave, and you got to listen to your heart and your heart on. You got to think with your brain, and you got to think with your dick. And yes, it is sort of scary at first. And my clubs especially are designed to make it a little scary, to make it seem like they're illegal or they're in, they're in a dark street. But it's all legal and it's all clean. And we work on this feeling of slumming and back alleys and secrets. And I would just say, overcome your fear. It's like going to the gym for the first time when you're not built up or anything and you're skinny and you're self-conscious and all of that. That's all normal. There's nothing to be you know, fearful of, but I understand. I understand the shyness and all of that, but you can overcome that. And anonymity and respect is the main thing about sex clubs. Respect each other, and you can do just about anything you want to do with anonymity. Find ways, if there's a person coming on to you and you don't want them to come on to you, there's ways of gently setting them aside, saying, you know, you're not my type, or I just came, or there's all kinds of ways of getting out of a slightly uncomfortable situation where you know, the guy just doesn't turn you on or something. So there's that fear, maybe, of not knowing how to maneuver this, but the fear will go away.
Yeah. When someone comes up to me and I'm just not interested, or I'm just not quite ready, I just say something like, I'm just being a voyeur right now.
Yeah. There you
and
go.
That is, it's true, and it's not offensive, and it takes care of the situation, so you're not uncomfortable.
The important thing is respect. I mean, you have to respect each other. Some guys don't get that, and you have to, from the office point of view, from the staff, you have to help people understand that this is just not a free-for-all.
Mm-hmm. And consent. It's always consent is always very important. Speaking of consent, that is a very key element of the club that I'm starting, the Palm Springs Jacks. MJ, is there anything else that you would like to share with my listeners that we haven't talked about today?
No, I'm just looking forward to jacking up with a bunch of guys. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I always say, talk dirty to me and I can shoot a load.
I'll remember that. Well, MJ, thank you very much for being on Sexual Heroes today. And in the show notes, I will have the links for Slammer in Los Angeles, Club 541 in Palm Springs, and also the link to my new group, the Palm Springs Jacks. If you're in Palm Springs, you have something to look forward to that you didn't before. Thank you, MJ.
Thank you for having me on. We appreciate it.